I guess I just like the idea of being somewhere I'm not meant to be. Like sneaking into someone else's world and leaving a mark. They have to erase it, you see. Paint over it. You can't unsee it. Welcome to Outside the Panels in our first episode on Ram V's bibliography, which God knows we're all pumped about this. We can't wait to talk about all of Ram's books. I am Poet Air, and as always, I'm joined by...
me, Chaz, and also...
me, Jack.
And today we are covering Graffiti's Wall, the coming-of-age heartfelt story set in Mumbai, which I think we all can relate to. It's filled with strong characters, and it's just a book that really captures that magic moment between youth and adulthood. And the fact that things are permanent but always change, but spirit and heart are always there with us. I'd read this book quite a few times. This is Jack and Chaz's first time reading it. And first off, it's Graffiti's Wall, written by Ram V. It is drawn by Anand R.K. and lettered by Aditya Bidigar. All three of them had spent time in Mumbai where it's set. And this is kind of their own semi-autobiographical story, which I know means a lot to the creators. And I can't wait to talk about it with both Jack and Chaz. I have a lot to say. This book holds a huge place in my heart. But let me hear from them first, since they're fresh on the book.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of it?
I super enjoyed this story. There are a few times where it gets a little bit of a bummer, of course, but that's, like you said, it's life. It's very indicative of that cusp of when your choices really start to matter. Everybody makes choices all the time, but as a child, some of the choices you make don't necessarily carry the same weight that you would as an adult, and a lot of these characters are right in that zone where those choices are going to start mattering and when those choices are really going to start having consequences. And we almost get to watch them through the different chapters move from those childish choices of indulging their dreams and desires to not worrying about what's going to happen to them tomorrow to realizing now that that time has passed and those do have real consequences. So, but it was a really beautiful, moving story filled with some... you could definitely tell that they were inspired by people that they knew or that they were the creators, because all of the characters felt real and felt whole. So,
and I can't wait to get into the characters. Jack, I feel like me and you could definitely relate to this, since we are grungy street kids now doing...
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know you do. I imagine you love the book.
I'll keep an eye out for the 5-0.
You can think about it?
Appreciate it. I think that this story was... each of the characters has a lot of things that I relate to, and it did feel very real, you know? I did really enjoy the aspect of humanity there and the themes of not only each of their own individual journeys, but also the world as a whole. You know, there were the heavy themes of people trying to, like, shut down their dreams, and the authoritarian kind of figures, and there were themes of, like, the gentrification and, like, corruption in the city, and there were a lot of individual themes for the different characters. You know, Jay with his hood rat shenanigans, getting him into all sorts of trouble. His ambition, you know, costing him a lot. Jespa with his struggle to try and fit in the city. And Graffiti with his... well, yeah, I think his mainly was getting shut down on his dream, you know, which was kind of a bummer. He's a super awesome creative soul. And you can definitely tell that they're focused off of, you know, real life people, because they feel real, and the city feels real. I've never been to Mumbai, but I kind of feel like I have from the way that they portray it.
Yeah. I was going to say, to expand on that, Mumbai is definitely a character in the story as well. Like, there's a living element to the city that pushes and pulls and at one point is described as churning these characters. And we get to watch them sort of struggle against that current of life in this ever-changing, busy city. So, yeah, it's pretty
The art really incredible. Depicts that, too, I think.
Yeah.
The art really makes it feel like it's moving, and the color palette, really.
Yeah, the Anand Arcade is crushing it in the colors in this book. For a quick story setup for those who have not read it, it is about four characters in Mumbai. Two are lifelong friends who are Suresh, known as Graffiti, who is an aspiring artist. And his best friend he's grown up with is Jay, who's an aspiring hip-hop artist who has kind of become under the thumb of a vicious drug lord named Mario to basically make money so he can kind of escape his life there living with his grandmother. The other main character is Chasma, who has moved there from Manipur to become a writer. And he's maybe my favorite character. We'll get into it more in his chapter. We'll go chapter by chapter real quick with this. And then Syra, who's an aspiring actress that has moved to Mumbai and also come under the vicious grasp of Mario, who's kind of leading her on and making her think he's going to get her some acting roles, but really, you know, just wants something else from her. But a huge part of the story is all these characters, and it is that, I mean, we've all been there, that magic moment between youth and adulthood where we have our dreams, we don't want to give up on them, and everyone is telling, you know, us or in telling the characters they should give up on their dreams. With Graffiti, it's his father who basically throws his graffiti art book out the window. He thinks it's foolish. He even tells him that he wanted to be a singer, but then he had to give up on his dreams and become a father, and it's not worth chasing him. With Jay, it's his grandmother who Jay kind of reminds her of his father, which we don't really know what happens to his father, but I'm guessing he had a tragic end. And with Chasma, it's more of his family in Manipur kind of thinks he's foolish for moving to Mumbai and following his dreams of writing. And it's just all these characters grasping for these beautiful dreams and set in Mumbai, this city, which gentrification is happening. They all live in the Chawl, which is the slum of Mumbai, and constantly buildings are getting demolished and changed. And in our first chapter with Graffiti, there is a tenement building that's always been there in their neighborhood that gets destroyed, and one wall is left up, and that becomes the titular Graffiti's Wall. It's a mural. And throughout the story, in each chapter, as we view each character, Graffiti adds to the mural and adds aspects of each character's journey onto the mural, which is quite beautiful. And on our first chapter, which would be the one I quoted in the beginning, which is Graffiti's chapter, where he decides to create the mural after his father disapproves of his dreams. What did you guys take from that first chapter? Because we're going to go through this journey with all these characters.
It was a real up and down chapter for me. There's the exciting escape as Graffiti is caught doing some street art, which had some real funny lines. I think when we were talking about the episode before, Jack had pointed out one of the lines, which was, do you know how much it costs to paint a wall? And he's like, I'm doing it for free. And then just...
See, I've always tried to explain that one to the police, and they just don't get it.
Yeah, right? Like, it's art. It's not it's not a matter of cost. It's coming from the soul. So you get to see a little bit of what makes him tick as he's running from the cops. He's saved from the corrupt sort of Inspector Saab by Jay, who comes into the police station with all sorts of swagger, and it's real cool to meet him. He seems like the cool dude of the crew that's, like, leading them all along, bribes them to get them out of trouble, and then we're just hit with that reality of, like, they live this big, giant life outside, and when they get home, his dad's line is, don't dream so much, it's painful to watch. Like, it was heartbreaking. We saw this big, epic, like, wow, look at these two guys making it, and then, like, right then, just crushed by that, and then it sort of starts to come back around. I see that glimmer of hope once he has the wall. And his first message on it of no one gives a fuck. was pretty good. It felt like the answer to those two authority figures that we meet, the inspector and Graffiti's father.
Exactly. And, you know, his art is absolutely, you know, beautiful. And also so much of Mumbai being a story, besides Mario, everything is so corrupt. The police are corrupt. And these are kids that these police are basically hassling and, you know, basically harassing, blackmailing, extorting. And it's really showing kind of that Mumbai culture that this stuff happened, you know, to children.
We could cut this out, but not to get too political. I think that's just police culture. It might be a little bit more on the surface of Mumbai, but I would imagine that
we don't need to cut it out. Me and Jack grid, firsthand graffiti time. Have encountered this.
Yeah, I was
going
to say you might have experienced without naming names or anything. You might have experienced similar Inspector Sobs here in the States.
Yes.
Yes. Undoubtedly. Yeah.
Too much AK. Into our past, yeah. But yeah, so, yes.
So yeah. I don't want to throw too much. There is a lot. There's another line actually that Graffiti's father says that there's nothing made in Mumbai anymore. Everything's manufactured and everything's brought in.
That is a great point too.
Because of these outside influences, and I think that's where some of that corruption and illegality stems from. Is that these things are being in? They're changing. It's changing faster than the people can adapt to it. And the only way that you can get above it is to step on that person below. That's the only way you can keep your head above.
And it's funny because I hear it's still a beautiful city. Me and Jack have several friends that have actually traveled to India many times on pilgrimages. I actually have a buddy, not going to say his name on here, but he goes to India every year and gets a bunch of clothes and then sells them in Northern California. Jack knows who I'm talking about. But
yeah.
He's a great dude, but he goes there every year, and it's absolutely his favorite place. They do really beautiful things in Mumbai and other cities in India where they burn their dead every night, and you would think that's kind of morbid, but I guess it's beautiful, and they do it on the shores of the river where, like, the people that passed away that night, they actually do, like, burn them almost like Vikings, burn all the bodies in a ceremony, which he told me is actually really, really, you know, beautiful and something that everyone should experience. One of my friends, in fact, have actually owned now a timeshare there because how often they go to India because how much they enjoy it. So that's the first chapter. The wall is set up. I'm going to have Jack lead into Jay's chapter, our aspiring hip-hop artist, drug dealer, who is working for people that shouldn't working for, and because he's a great friend and his camaraderie with his friends and loyalty to them, he digs himself deeper and deeper and deeper into the hole with Mario. So this, why don't you tell us about the second chapter of Graffiti's Wall focused on Jay Jaish?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and start by reading something that his grandma said to him. But you live under the sun for too long and it'll dry you up from the inside. In this parched place, you learn to make do with what you have before the thirst becomes all-consuming. Perhaps I see what I want to in my old age, or perhaps I just miss my son. But I see the same sparkle in your eye. I fear that you reach for the stars while the ground beneath you, your feet turns to sand. So that was definitely a pretty moving excerpt there. Quote by his grandmother talking about his father, who obviously was up to similar activities as Jay, and she's worried about him there, and talking about how, like, the pressure of living in the city is, you know, drives these people to do some crazy and dangerous things sometimes to achieve their ambition, and she's worried about him. And, you know, I definitely feel that. I feel for them.
It's such a brutal chapter because he has a famous hip-hop artist friend who wants him to open for him, and he makes the horrible decision to go and do this run for Mario, even though he knows he shouldn't.
He kind of has to, though.
He has to because Mario basically
to get back for
him.
Greasing the palms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he gets extorted by the the police, and he ends up missing the show and then just getting beaten by Mario and his thugs. And it's just sad. At the end of that chapter, you see the mural has the mic added, which we'll talk about later at the end, as Chaz brought up. So each chapter ends with graffiti adding to the mural. So the first mural, you know, is added is graffiti's reflection on there. And then in the second one, he adds a mic to kind of incorporate Jay's soul into the mural. And yeah, each chapter has so much to grasp from these characters. And not only do, you know, this Mumbai character, but there's so many side characters that are so important. Do you guys mind if I go into the third part, which is my favorite character? I'll admit I'm kind of a mix between Chasma and Jay. I'm like a hybrid Chasma and Jay. Now I'm just like Chasma. I've grown up. But when I was younger, definitely I relate with both. So Chasma moves from Manipur. Chasma is definitely an analog for Ramvi, who did move to go to school to Mumbai before he moved to London. And he writes letters to his sister Mary constantly just to write, to kind of get a writing practice, you know, off, and to get him to become a better writer. And I want to read something about his, you know, experience in Mumbai that he's telling his sister about. And he's talking about how he works at this Chinese restaurant that they make him wear Japanese clothes, which he thinks is, you know, is ridiculous because it's a Chinese restaurant. And there's an old cook there who describes Mumbai as American chop suey. And there's this beautiful writing where he's writing to his sister about how when he gets off at 3 a.m., he sees these streets full of Mumbai. So I'm going to read this because it really touches me every time I read it. "They're all beautiful, Mary, like scattered gems, glinting in the moments before the lights are turned out. They come from all over the country, perhaps all over the world. No one asks them if they belong or what tribe they're from. I hate that word, tribe. They're nowhere people, Mary, and so they're everywhere people. Maybe one day I'll know what it's like to feel that way." And then when he talks to, and first off, before I get to the next part, I think that's such a beautiful display of where the world needs to go. No borders. We're all humans. We are all from the same place. We should not be separated. And I love that Ram, you know, puts that in his writings, that we are all everywhere people, no matter where we've lived, where we were born, that we're all on this planet together and we should be together in unity. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful writing piece. And then after he's done writing to Mary, he comes up to Yai, the chef. And this is the title of the chapter, which is my favorite chapter, American Chop Suey, where he describes Mumbai as American chop suey. He says, "See, it's just like American chop suey. So it's got noodles and fried noodles and a fried egg on top. And you could have beans and chilies and cabbage and soy sauce and vinegar and sugar and pretty much anything else you want to add to it, right? But when you eat it, no one can ever figure out what the hell's actually in the thing. That's when I know I made it just right." That makes no sense. "I'm telling you, that's what Mumbai's like. You don't quite understand how it works or who all these people are and where they come from, but it sure tastes good, like American chop suey." And from that point, Chasma begins to write letters, which I think is so beautiful, every day, and hand them out to strangers. And it creates such a fun scene in the book because some people will read it and say it's beautiful. Some people will throw it right in the trash. Some people literally attack him.
Making direct eye contact. That was the best part.
I like Jay's response. "I can't even read."
That's one of the beautiful part about it, is because I wish there would be a way that Jay could read it, because he wrote one for him too. But just the fact of all these different reactions of people getting these letters. Some throw them away. Some, like I said, attack him. And it kind of leads to the end of this chapter, where he, just like Graffiti, decides to throw his writing journal out near the mural on the ground, which then Syra, who we've met briefly before, who is basically this girl who wants to be an actress.
Mario squeeze.
Yeah.
Right now.
She becomes the heart of the story, really. She brings the boys all closer together, but she finds Chasma's, you know, writing, and he's a chubby person. He's got low self-esteem, and she just thinks it's beautiful. And it's that great moment where after she reads it and asks him to go out and eat with her, where you just see that, we've all been there, that giddy moment when you're shy and you don't have quite the self-esteem you need yet. And just, you know, the brightness in his face when this beautiful woman asks him to go eat with her, because how blown away she is by his writing, seeing past the physical, seeing, you know, what he has to offer. And that kind of ends the chapter on Chasma. I'll you guys throw in what you want to talk about with that chapter as well.
I was going to say...
I was going to say one thing. But then at the end of that chapter, then the letters that he's writing in envelopes are now incorporated into the mural. What did you guys think about that chapter?
I like that chapter a lot as well. Seeing the evolution sort of Chasma's journey in a way. Because there's a point in there after he's done talking to Jay and Graffiti where he starts another letter to Mary and says, perhaps I won't introduce you to my friends after all. They can be real jerks sometimes. And then it gets into the point of his letters isn't necessarily just to do it. He's seeking anonymity, he says. Sometimes I wonder if the anonymity that I yearn for is the city's quiet acceptance of me, my belonging implicit in its passive inaction. So we have that idea of action pushing him away, this rejection. So he's accepting of this rejection because he knows that it's a part of life, but it also shows his own effort in trying to become a part of that life, becoming a part of that city, almost the way that the chef, I think, is. Like, the chef is very much just there. He knows that he did a good job making this American chop suey, which doesn't belong anywhere in his own country, cooked by him or whatever, right? Like, it's a wholly American invention of a Chinese dish that's now being cooked in India in a restaurant that is making their waiters dress like they're Japanese people. So the cook is just there. He's living. He's figured out his life in a way. And I think Chasma's looking for that similar complacency in a way, that he can be a part of this without feeling the eyes on him for his skin or for his weight. And with Syra, when we first meet Mario at the beginning, we didn't point this out, but in order to show what a big dick Mario is, he comments on how beautiful Graffiti's wall has come along and then takes a piss on it. Like, he says, this is such a beautiful like, you did this? Wow, it's great. And then just fucking lets loose and pees all over it. So he's a real asshole. He sees Chasma sort of checking out Syra because she's beautiful. And then fucking is like, oh, you like him? You like her? Yeah, I see you looking, and like slaps his chest and calls him big boy and like slips a little bit of whatever the drug they're dealing is, implied maybe meth, but perhaps blow. Who knows? Probably meth. And says, you're going to love it because it's going to get you thin and the side effects are A+.
I think it's meth for the fact that like he went and delivered it to that hotel and they were having like a sex party and invited him in.
It could be meth though. That gets you pretty horny.
I think that
no firsthand experience, I promise.
That's more of, I think, a sex drug more than coke.
But I think it shows why he would be a little bit more insecure around her when we see them reconnect in this chapter, while also really showing again that rejection, that idea that Mario doesn't even really know him and already is like pegged him for like, oh, you're a fat nerd. You need this. You can't get with this hot lady unless you're like thin and pretty, boy. Here you go. And I think it's great too that Jay immediately snatches it up from him and is like, get the shit out of here. Like, as much as Jay is a part of this world in order to make money and escape from it, he's not at the level of, I'm going to sink my friends with my own ship. Like, can't let it happen. So, yeah, so I thought that was really interesting. And I think that that last letter in the chapter that he's writing to Mary about rejection and about acceptance really ties into what's going to happen in the next chapter. But I thought it was really good. Down to the part where he starts ripping up his whole journal, almost. That there's a line right before that, even, that it's saying, "Here I am, alone at a wall in the debris of someone else's dreams, screaming at this city for acceptance. What has it ever given me but hardship and pain?" And then he tosses the words into the air, like as a release.
And Sarai almost saves him from that because she lets him know, you know, it's beautiful he's doing, you know what I mean? Jack, did you want to add anything to that?
I think it's also great just seeing him, like, seeing Mario just be, like, such an asshole to him, and then him about, like, Soraya and all that, and then just him kind of feeling like the shit when she, like, shows up and starts, you know, sweet-talking with him. He's like, it's like, I'll feel it shitty, and then he's like, oh, wait, I feel like the shit right now. And yeah, I don't know. I definitely really, really like his character. He seems super sweet. And as far as, yeah, Mario giving him that bag of miscellaneous powder, I liked how they showed him kind of look at it for a second in question, and then Jay slaps it out of his hand. And he's like, "Don't take that shit." Which is also great considering that, you know,
being a good friend,
and being a good friend, yeah. And the fact
I don't even think he was gonna take it, but
but you could see him kind of just like thinking about it in his head, his gears were turning. He like never even thought about that. It just shows to like the innocence and purity in his heart. I think the fact that they showed him just kind of get like dumbfounded by that. I like the way they show him kind of just like trudging through his day-to-day grind and talking with the older man, the cook, about the American chop suey thing, and it kind of like you can tell it really clicks with him, and he feels a lot more comfortable and references that same American chop suey reference throughout the rest of the novel. Yeah, I don't know, just altogether great chapter.
Yeah. I think he's the ingredient, yeah, and the city is the chop suey.
Exactly.
He's trying to become lost in the mix.
So we've all had our moments now. Chaz, do you want to bring in Bambi Talkies, the end main chapter before the epilogue, which we'll all talk about? Why don't you talk about Bambi Talkies, and then we'll all put our thoughts in about it.
So this final chapter, we get to finally see sort of the end of these characters' journeys. So we get to see Graffiti's sort of final take on the wall. Syra is deciding that she's going for this big. It opens with her showing off her acting skills, what brought her doing an old Bollywood monologue. And they're all blown away. They're like, "Oh, you're going to go meet these producers? You're going to go do this thing?" And they're like, "No, I'm doing stuff with Mario and all this other, like, I can't." But I'm not really, we find out that Mario definitely, this is the moment where she knows that she's gone as far as she can with Mario, that there's no more producers that he is going to introduce her to. There's no more putting off, "You'll meet him later. You'll meet him later." So she's decided that she's just done and she's going to go. And she asked Chasma to go with her, but we get to see them sort of enjoy almost their last day together, really, as a group of four, which I thought was really beautiful. So Syra decides that she's going to leave with Mario's money on the train, and that she's going to find somewhere fresh, somewhere new, somewhere where nobody knows her. Chasma decides to buy some tickets to the movies anyways for his friends, hoping that she'll be in there, that she'll show up, that she'll be still a part of this group, but realizes that she's gone, gone. So he chases after her, and she's upset that he never asked her to stay, and that he's more upset that he's mad about her stealing Mario's money. So they decide they're going to run away together. They're at the train, but Mario has arrived, and he's definitely not happy, and they're trying to take her out. And Chasma, at least my favorite quote from the book, which I believe is in one of the letters that he's writing.
That's the letter Graffiti's writing, but yeah, when talking about when he stops being an observer and takes action.
Yeah, so it's all about, the quote goes, "See, you only get to make choices, so many real choices, the kind that matter and are brimming with potential for change." And Chasma, who'd gone through all of his life avoiding his choices, as we all often do, was finally making his. "The choice we all make, do we embrace the reality of our lives and find beauty in it? Or do we fly in search of escape only to find beauty in the bittersweet realization of its futility?" And he decides his choice is that he is going to let Syra fly, that he's going to stand back and stand up to Mario and his men in order for that train to get away and for her to start that new life, because he is, as we saw in the previous chapter, searching for his own beauty here in Mumbai, and that for him is going to come in the form of acceptance from the city and the people of it. But he knows that he has the acceptance of his friends. So at least there's some beauty in that. And we get to see that when he retreats ultimately to the wall, which has had its final sort of addition to the mural. And it reaches the big climactic scene of Mario confronting Chasma and Graffiti at the wall, but with Jay to the rescue. We're left with a gunshot and no real clear resolution. And I think we all kind of want to discuss what happened there, but this chapter was beautiful, I thought, as far as seeing Chasma's journey from "I want acceptance from this city" to "I want acceptance from this woman" to "I have acceptance from my friends and I can help save this woman." And also when I was saying earlier that the choices you make as a child are different than the choices you make as an adult. This choice in this moment feels like that childish, impulsive choice that we get to see at the end has real impactful consequences. So,
yes. And at the confrontation, first off, the final piece of the mural is a beautiful picture of Syra, who also want to bring up is how she kind of brought all the boys closer. They would go to all those summer movies together. And I feel like she kind of became the heart of the group, brought even all of them closer together than they already were. And that final confrontation with the gunshot does lead to a can of Graffiti's getting shot. And then it kind of just ends there. But then we get to the epilogue, which I know we want to all talk about, because most of the writing in the beginning of the book is from Chasma, but this last chapter is actually being written by Graffiti. And the reason he is writing it and telling the story is because Graffiti is now a teacher at an art institute, and this is a story he commonly tells his students. And it seems like a story they all love, and he kind of gives updates on everyone in the book. He talks about how Chasma is now a famous writer and that they still keep in contact. And that Syra became an actress. He'd seen her in commercials. And that Jay is missing. No one's heard from him. And he does a line in this is, "I kept hoping he'd show up, cap flipped backward, that familiar hoodie on even in the sweltering heat, saying something that sounded dangerously close to being wise. I miss him. And I hope that wherever he is happy and well." Which now we can all get into the the symbolism of that. First off, I want to say Anand Arke was an art teacher and is now obviously an artist. He's Ram V's usual partner in books. They have a new book coming out and from a new white... This is technically a White Noise book too. White Noise Studios is through all labels. You could see White Noise Marketing in Image, in Vault, and in Dark Horse, but they usually do a line together in Vault. And I know that they still haven't announced the title, but Ram V, Anand Arke, and Aditya Bidikar, their new book, which the title still hasn't been announced yet, will be announced soon, is actually a book they made right after this book, but then it was put on hold. So I'm really interested to see what that's going to be. And on the overall, I love this. It reminds me a lot of Mumbai Stand By Me, except with older characters, just because they all get to learn and grow together. And then that whole ending of the teacher telling the story of graffiti grown up and kind of, retelling this part of his youth that, created the foundation of the adult he would become. And, Jack, you still there? Are you?
Yes. Yes, I'm here.
All right. Yeah. And I think that I know Jack was curious that he thought Jay killed Mario and went on the run. I think me and Chaz are more thinking that Jay was murdered by Mario, but left up in the air. I like the symbolism, Chaz, that you said. And what was the symbolism you were saying?
That the destruction of the graffiti can was sort of indicative of Jay getting shot. And then we also see on the mural that there's no hand holding the microphone, that the parka that looks like it would be holding it has been empty this whole time, which it's actually I was noticing as we're going through the book and I had it open here. There's nobody in that parka from when he paints it. So it's either his own invisible hand at work or it's the idea that Jay is there, but he is still gone.
In spirit, he is there, yeah.
Yeah. So.
And then a beautiful ending of it is when he's telling this story, he talks about the tenement in the Chawl, that it finally became a high-class hotel, getting into gentrification, and he's sure it was destroyed. But then the rich guy that made this high-class hotel actually kept the mural, and now it sits in the lobby of the hotel for all people to see graffiti's work.
Which is kind of beautiful in a way, but also a little bit sad, a little bit heartbreaking. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't recognized almost in his time because of his status. And then in true gentrification form, they took something old and said that it was expensive and fancy and high class, sort of. Like, I don't know. There's something a little bit sad about that for me.
It's bittersweet. I think it also has to deal with the themes of the book. But before we move on, we're going to do some announcements. We have a big announcement, and then we're also going to have some fun for a little bit that we started on yesterday when we had our failed recording, which I want to have some fun and talk about it at the end of this episode. But anyway, I wrote this because I think there's a lot of themes in it, and this is for Ram V. He listens to our shows. He listens to Nerds. He's going to listen to this. And so, Ram, this is my takeaway on this very personal book for you. And I wrote it out. It's just kind of a summary, but also about what I feel that the story's themes are. So I'm just going to go quick into it. Graffiti's Wall is a coming-of-age story set in that magic moment between youth and adulthood. The four main characters, Suresh, Jay, Chasma, and Syra, are all grasping for their dreams. With the harsh and cold reality of the Mumbai streets and their family's views pushing against them. Suresh, also known as Graffiti, the artist, risks arrest by displaying his beautiful art on the city walls, pushed down by corrupt police officers. Jay dreams of being a hip-hop artist, but his ambition leads him into a dangerous life, working for the monster Mario. Chasma just wants to observe life and notate the beauty he sees in all things, including the mundane. He spends time writing well-crafted letters that he passes out to strangers. Syra dreams of being a Bollywood star, and her ambition has also led her under the thumb of Mario. She brings the boys all closer together over the summer and helps transform Chasma into a person who takes action and into the adult he will become. A tenement is destroyed in the beginning of the story. The one remaining wall becomes Graffiti's mural. He constantly updates the beautiful mural to include moments him and his friends experienced together or felt. I feel that the story is a metaphor on the destruction of youth and the rebirth that occurs in adulthood. And as the mural stays in the hotel when it is built, I think the main themes are that most things change, but heart and spirit will always remain. This was Graffiti's Wall by my boy Ram V, my boy Anand RK, and the hardest working handcrafted letter, Aditya Bidikar, which if you don't know and in comic terms is a lot of lettering is done digitally now. You just type it out, where Aditya literally writes every single letter in each one of his books that he does. And he has probably 20 titles or more out a month, which I can only imagine is painstaking and time consuming, but it's worth it. His letters are absolutely beautiful and they look different for each story. Now, should we go into announcements before nonsense?
First, I think you should put that letter there in an envelope and save it for if we ever have in-person conventions again, so that you could give it to Ram V like Chasma would.
Yeah, if we have a booth at one of the cons, once cons are available, we will save that and then give it to Ram V. Or even I'll have it printed and sent to him. I think I could probably get his address at least for where he accepts stuff and send that to him. Ram, Anand, and Aditya, thank you for this story. It reminds me a lot of my youth. I know it probably reminds Jack a lot of his youth, and I think it got us really, really in the heart. And it's a story everyone should read. If you haven't read it and you love this episode, definitely go get it. It's worth your time. And it's such a great way to kick off this Ram V miniseries, because to see him now grow and transcend from here, but keeping some of those same themes, it's just going to be a beautiful ride. And I can't wait till we get into his horror, which is going to be, you know, probably our longest episode to date when we get into that. So let's do announcements first. Big announcement on our North Bend episode, which will be coming out in December. We are very honored to welcome Ryan Ellsworth, writer of North Bend, onto the show. And he's not going to be just an interview. He's going to be our fourth host, which I am honored to have him do that. He digs the show and he wants to just talk with us and have a good time and kind of analyze his own book with us and to probably talk to Jack a little bit about a person we know that we won't name. We'll make up a name for her on it just for litigious reasons.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a little.
I mean, technically, I think
they wouldn't
not,
be able to even tell.
I doubt it's her real name. It's definitely not her real name, right? Or is it? I thought it might be.
I have no idea. Like honestly, anyway, she's an alien.
We'll have some real life experience, it sounds like.
Yeah, Mary Prankster Kid. Yeah, so I feel like Leary or someone may have named her that. But either way, we're so excited to have Ryan on the show. It's going to be so much fun. And I can't wait to talk about North Bend with them. I'm sure you guys are pumped too. So our next week, we'll be covering White Ash, our next Scout book, which is written by Charlie Stickney and drawn by Connor Hughes. We can't wait to get into that fantasy Romeo and Juliet, Pennsylvania mining town story. And also, as an announcement, we're going to do, after this miniseries, we're going to do a few of the White Noise Vault books, because we love our White Noise boys, and that'll transcend into Chaz's pick. And Chaz, are you ready to announce yet who your writer's going to be?
Man, there's still a few in deliberation, so give me one more week before I put my
finger on. Do you
know
your publisher you're going to pick?
No, I figured we would interweave it with some of the White Noise Boys stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, that works good. So we'll interweave it with White Noise Boys. Next week we'll have the announcement. I'm excited. I think I know the two it's between. I can't wait to tell you. We can't wait to tell you guys who it's going to be. And especially one of them. I can't wait to see the selected bibliography if he goes that route.
Yeah, there's a lot to choose from if I go that route. Prolific.
So now we got to talk about something serious that happened yesterday. And it's, you know, it's really
important. It is. And it's serious for real. It's a real serious thing.
And we're concerned. And it's being here in Las Vegas, we're the closest to this person. So, you know, as Red Letter Media says, to keep eyes on Breen. I introduced the boys to Neil Breen yesterday and all of his insane masterpieces, and it kind of just spiraled out into hilarity.
I don't know. We might have to edit this out later. If he hears us talking about him, we might get disintegrated.
I don't think so.
I saw him disintegrate people with his mind in that pass-through supercut you sent. Well, I don't know if he disintegrated.
Yeah, I don't want to be one of those 32,000, you know?
People. That movie definitely got him on a watch list. Eyes on Breen.
I'm worried I'm on a watch list from just watching it on YouTube.
Yeah, just from clicking his websites.
Yeah. Also, his websites for each one are not better than the other thing that we talked about while we were waiting yesterday, the Space Jam website that's still up and active. That's a quality website.
Wait a second. That Space Jam website for like the movie from 1995?
Yeah, you could go to spacejam.com and it's the same. It's like a time capsule. It's like we were saying the other day, it's like in Demolition Man. You know, when they're at the museum and they look down and they're like, this was called a convenience store. It's like we peeled up the baseboard of the modern internet and we just saw like, wow, look at how we used to live.
So first off, everyone, look up Neil Breen. You got to check him out. I think eventually in the future we'll do a Neil Breen special, and I can't wait to get into that. In February, Jack's going to be here in Vegas. So we're going to do a few fun things with the whole cast together. We want to kind of watch some movies together and have fun. And right now, we're in between either doing all five Neil Breen films or watching Cats. So, listeners, when you hear this episode,
now
vote.
It's tough though. Two of those Neil Breen films aren't out anymore. They're the sole rights are Neil Breen's alone, and he has not put them out right now. So
we can go track Breen down and make.
I mean, if we watch one,
I don't want to get this.
If we watch one Breen movie.
I know.
If we watch one Breen movie, it'll be worth it.
But yeah,
but listeners, here's the vote.
I agree.
Both. Cats or the Breen movie? Like, pass through. How about let's pick pass through? Cats?
I don't know. Twisted Pair sounded all pretty
interesting. I'm down with Twisted. Okay, we'll do a three pick. Twisted Pair, Cats, or pass through? Let us.
A Twisted Pair sounds like you need to take a visit down to the hospital. I don't know. It sounds painful.
Let us know which ones you want us to watch.
Torsion situation.
And we'll do a watch party. We'll put it on YouTube, and we'll all have a lot of fun together. And then you guys will get to meet my beautiful daughter, too, Willow, who's going to be here any day now.
So excited.
I'm
sure we'll hear her in the background of some episodes in the future.
Yeah, she's going to be in the background of episodes and in the background at my work as well.
Yeah.
But yeah. So,
some other important things that we should mention, too. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter, both ourselves and the show. And it's Outside The, with an O for our Twitter handle for Outside
with
The
zero.
Bands, correct?
So it's Outside with The, with a zero. So Outside The, but instead of an O, it's a zero. So zero U-T-S-I-D-E, The, at Twitter. Also, follow our other family that we love, Nerds from the Underground. You could follow them at Nerds From. And you could also find them on iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Once again, you can find us, our podcast, Outside the Panels, on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. And please write, review, and subscribe. And please follow us individually. My Twitter tag is PoetAir33 at Twitter. Chaz, you are?
You can find me on Twitter at Chaz Simons. Eventually, I'll be famous enough for it, I promise.
And then, Jack, they can find you at?
You can find me on Twitter as Sin Aesthetics with an X. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as Sin Aesthetic.
All right, and
I am appearing as myself as well on Instagram and Facebook. It is.
I don't know why we're not friends on Instagram and Facebook, Jazz.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I guess I probably should have done that. Yeah, that's an easy remedy.
We'll bring it together. Bring it together.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but you all can follow us on there as well with all these fun handles. And it's outside the on Twitter to follow the show with a zero for the outside part. The rest is all the same as you normally know it.
Anyway, we thank you for your support and listening. Next week, we'll be talking about White Ash. And this has been Outside the Panels. I hope you all have a lovely beginning to your week or end to your week. And as always, be good to each other. Treat each other well. Let's, you know, really stand in unity on that. And Chaz, your final and always ending way of the episode, what do you need to tell everyone?
Wash your hands.
Please, please wash your hands. You guys have a great day.